From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Since our last podcast, the Postal Service performance has rebounded slightly to attain the level of 87% of first-class mail being delivered on time for the first week of 2024. That is nationwide. That number is still trails the same period last year by more than 2 points and fails to meet the USPS's self-imposed 92.5% target. I would add that the 92.5% target is the same target as the previous fiscal year, not 95% on time performance that was envisioned by the Postal Service when the Postmaster General's Delivering for America plan was unveiled. Also, in a recent response to a Postal Regulatory Commission question posed as part of the Commission's annual compliance determination, the Postal Service sought to rationalize its inability to meet the 95% threshold. In part, the Postal Service suggested, and I quote, "We have been setting annual service performance targets that are predicated on progress towards this goal, based on operational considerations, including prior year performance, and expected network and operational changes pursuant to the plan." Interestingly, the Postal Service is implicitly blaming its failure to meet performance goals on its own network realignment. How ironic. There's no irony associated with this week's Naps Chat guest. She was and continues to be a congressional treasure, former Congresswoman Connie Morella. Congresswoman Morella served in the House of Representatives from 1987 through 2003 and was subsequently appointed by President George W. Bush to be the U.S. representative to the International Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development with the status of ambassador. When in the House of Representatives, Connie Morella was a senior member of the House Committee on Government Reform and a subcommittee chair, and most importantly, to NAPS and other federal and postal organizations, an acknowledged champion on behalf of the federal and postal workforce. Thank you for joining me here at the Connie Morella Library here in Bethesda, Maryland, Congresswoman.
It's a great pleasure for me, Bob Levy, and I just hope you don't have overdue books.
No, I do not have any overdue books, so they're not going to haul me off to the county jail. Connie, you have a distinguished career in education, community service, politics, and international affairs. If you had to choose, which facet of your life experience was most frustrating and most gratifying, and why?
Well, there have been pluses and minuses throughout the journey, but it's been a wonderful journey, and I have no regrets, and I really find it hard to indicate something that was the worst, or I think it was all the best. Obviously, legislatively, there were opportunities where I thought we could have done better than we did. Situations helping the constituents, however, were always positive, and that gave me great gratification. And, you know, representing Bob, as you know so well, the federal constituency was a real pleasure. I mean, I had in my district the National Institutes of Health, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, FDA, and these were my constituents, and they were government. They are government.
When you were serving in Congress, I could recall the small post offices around the district. We had the historic post office in Bethesda. We had a historic post office in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. Things have changed since those days, particularly with the Postal Service.
They have indeed. But, you know, I must say, the Postal Service will always be very special to me. That was my very first committee assignment, was on the Post Office and Civil Service Committee. So I had an opportunity to learn a lot about the background, the hard work, all of the technologies and intricacies of the postal system, and came out with great admiration and the hope that I did help to make a difference.
That was interesting. You know, you say that you served on the old House Post Office and Civil Service Committee. Those are the days when members of Congress actually had expertise and had time to focus on postal issues, unlike today, where there's the bandwidth of members of Congress is much far broader.
Well, if you would allow me the opportunity to do a little comparison that I've thought of the last few months. I served in the state legislature, the Maryland legislature, before I went to Congress. I served 8 years. And I must say, I can't help but compare some of the differences with the concept that maybe we could improve the latter being the Congress of the United States. By that I mean, in the state legislature of Maryland, I realize state legislatures differ. You did not have, if you were on a committee and you could not go to the House floor was in session and you could not have any committees operating at the same time. So everybody went to the session at the same time. You had assigned seats, so you knew who sat next to you, and they were not done by partisan measurements. And then in the afternoon, you could go to your committees. The Senate worked in the opposite direction. They met in the afternoon, and they had their committees in the morning. So it worked out so that you got to know people. You were in your seat listening to the debate and engaging in the debate. Congress has so many committees and subcommittees and caucuses, and I must say I was involved with all of them. and so therefore very often they can't be on the floor when something is being discussed because they have a special committee meeting at that time where there'll be some voting taking place. So they miss that opportunity and they rush in to perhaps vote. So I think there could be some changes. Also, another point, in the Maryland state legislature, you cannot raise money during the session. Wow. I really think Congress could meet 3 weeks of a month and have 1 week back in their district.
To raise money?
To see the constituents firsthand, face-to-face kind of thing, you know, but they'd be away from Congress so they could do those things and meet with constituents and then come back and have the other 3 weeks where they are attentive, going to their committees, and perhaps, again, the voting could be done when everybody is there and the committees could meet at another time. So, in other words, there could be some adjustments made. That isn't the total answer, but adjustments need to be made so people can work face-to-face, listening to the issues and to their constituents, always remembering their country.
How comfortable would you feel in the 118th Congress, the Congress that's currently in session?
Bob, if you knew the district I represented, and I know you do, and if you knew me, you would recognize that my 16 years in the House of Representatives, for 8 years, I was a minority in the minority party. And for 8 years, I was a minority in the majority party, which means that I would pretty much be put in the category of, hey, she's rather independent.
Yeah, you were always noted for your independence. Independence isn't really rewarded these days in Congress.
It is not. And as a matter of fact, there are penalties for that kind of independence. I always let the leadership of my party know that I was going to do something and why I was going to do it. And because they needed the seat, and I think because they had some respect for me, I was never nasty or didn't understand, then there were a few allowances made. But there is no doubt there are penalties when you don't follow the party, now more than ever. And I really think changes could be done in the attitude of the leaders of both parties, where they could offer more opportunities for independence of their members to help their constituencies and, as they saw, help their countries. But they are very strict about it. You want to be on a certain committee? Would you like something, a special, a significant assignment and some other issue that comes up? You won't get it if you haven't gone along with what your party leadership says.
You know, there's one part of me that says if there was more party discipline, you wouldn't have had the removal of a speaker this Congress. I mean, we've had in American history, more recent American history, very strong speakers who really enforced party discipline. I think of Sam Rayburn, for example, mm-hmm. Tip O'Neill, you know, Newt Gingrich. There was a sense of party discipline that doesn't exist right now. Yet, independence is at one point, extremists are sort of encouraged, but the party seems very limited in its ability to contain that extremism.
Well, I think it's because you have this a non-leadership environment. The leadership is coming from outside of Congress. Mm. You have an entity, and I see it pretty much as the kind of Trump effect, okay. That people are fearful that they will lose their jobs, they will lose financial situation for their campaigns, they will lose authority if they do not go along with this wave of self-importance.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to a specific legislative issue that was, and you alluded to it earlier. As a member of the Committee on Government Reform and the Post Office and Civil Service Committee, you were deeply involved in protecting the hard-earned health and retirement benefits of federal and the postal workforce during periods of relentless attempts to gut the civil service retirement mm-hmm. system, federal employees' retirement system, federal employees' health benefits program. In your view, how did we succeed, or how did you succeed in repelling these attacks?
By simply telling the truth, by simply letting them know, this is our country. These are the people that are helping to enforce our diplomacy and democracy in the best way possible. Recognize them as the people who give them, afford them opportunities in every single facet of life. I mean, you talk about immigration. It comes from federal employees who are helping with immigration. You talk about finances, loans, or Medicare. These are federal employees that we have that run our country and help us in every way. So I guess, but to give you an easy answer, I just simply say, let's look at the people who are important in our lives. And they are the federal employees. They're very often forgotten, but they're the ones who make everything run as a diplomacy and democracy.
Mm-hmm. When you served in Congress, you weren't independent. You were an independently minded member of the party, of the Republican Party, during your tenure. But you were joined by a number of other prominent Republicans in fighting for federal and postal employees. And I say name like Tom Davis of Virginia, Ileana Ross-Leighton of Florida, Ben Gilman of New York, Chris Shays of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. You weren't alone. So is there a group that can sort of coalesce, bipartisan group that can coalesce on behalf of the federal and postal workforce currently?
I think at that time, I really think that group made a difference. As a matter of fact, we would meet like on a Wednesday for lunch, and we would talk about, you know, that this is going to come up on this particular committee, and it's going to hurt this agency, which is so important. And so we would plan a strategy. What would you do about it? You'd first of all probably go to the speaker and try to get it removed before it came out on the floor, or you would plan whatever strategy you thought would help. So we would discuss issues and we would come up with a strategy. Not every one of them cared about every issue we brought up. But we, as a matter of fact, I really think it enhanced a democracy, the fact that you could have a group that maybe had a differing opinion with some good ideas and could kind of offset going in an extreme position either way. And, I don't know whether they have something like this now. I don't think so. Because, you know, I'm a political junkie. I feel as a poet had once said, I was there to wind the clock. I came to hear it strike. And so I feel an obligation still, which is why I'm involved even now with the Association of Former Members of Congress.
Which just brings me to my next question. As a former president of the Association of Former Members of Congress, which is bipartisan, it's various age groups, how would you characterize their views of the current situation in Congress?
They mourn. They grieve. They hope to see bipartisanship. They truly do. In fact, we talk about everything we do is really nonpartisan, but we go to colleges, we work with countries, the diplomats in other countries and groups from other countries too, to tell them about what is the best in our democracy and how we can help them. We do a lot of work with currently, even with agencies. We do work with current members of Congress too, who need some assistance from the former members. It is so wonderful, Bob, that it is nonpartisan. I say bipartisan, it's really nonpartisan. And you find there are some like Martin Frost. Martin Frost and I didn't always agree on issues, and yet he's so easy now to work with in a nonpartisan way. And I could go through some other names. I don't know how you account for it, except I think they look at what democracy is about, what government is about, what trust is about, and they decide we're going to work together. And they don't have the armament or the structures that would limit them.
It's one of the issues, and I know that this is near and dear to your heart, and you were impacted by this, is that the periodic congressional reapportionment in states where legislatures draw congressional lines are to blame in a large part for congressional dysfunction, where you create districts that yield doctrinaire partisans that can't go towards this moderation. They tend to be one-party districts. As I say, you have some experience with that type of outcome. Could you share your views about drawing congressional lines, since that is an extremely political activity?
It's extremely political, and it's extremely important. And as a matter of fact, we can see the consequences. By that I mean right now, you have more one-party districts than ever before. That came about through redistricting, through leaving it in the hands of the one party that was dominant in a state to draw the lines. And there have been many examples of incredibly ridiculous lines that have been drawn. And so I feel that it has become more of a challenge and a difficulty now than ever before.
How do we change that?
Well, I think states can, we also believe in the independence of states, giving them authority. I think they could work out something where they put it more in the hands of the people. When I say the people, not looking at them in terms of who's a Republican, who's a Democrat, but responsible people in a community that could have more of a hand on redistricting rather than leaving it in the hands of the elected people who are going to feel that they have to help their own party.
Or help themselves. If I'm in the state legislature, yeah, and I want to eventually run for Congress, I'm going to draw lines that will accommodate my
future. I remember a state official who is now passed, but he was a big authority in the state legislature, and he liked me, and he said, Connie, if you don't change parties, you're going to lose the next one because of redistricting. This is before it happened.
Now, let's move on to postal issues a little bit. An international postal issue, sort of. As an ambassador, you were a recipient of numerous diplomatic pouches, and mm-hmm. I put that in quotes, diplomatic pouches. Could you tell me, what are diplomatic pouches? How are they transported? What's in them? And how are they received?
Well, they're diplomatic pouches that are rather secretive because they're meant for the highest official in an area. And they're important strategic information that is guarded all the way to its destination. As a matter of fact, I think if you have somebody who is going to be delivering a pouch, it has to be on the same plane with that person. I mean, they guard it. And it's because it's valuable information that's going to help strategically in a country.
Sort of like the way the Postal Service used to operate and protect. I mean, it still does. That federal law protects the sanctity of the mail.
That's right.
And the sanctity of a diplomatic pouch is something comparable, maybe. I mean, there's an old story that the Hope Diamond, which was received, which was donated by Harry Winston to the Smithsonian Institute, was actually escorted to Washington, D.C., because it was by the Postal Service, because it was sent registered mail. And if anything is sacred, that is.
I would think so, too. Exactly.
One of the items I looked at on the website for the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, and one would think it really has very little to do with the Postal Service. However, I noted that the organization provided a forum for discussion of, among other things, global postal competition, electrification of international postal fleets, international conveyance of counterfeit goods, and just an international commerce generally. How is the Postal Service or international postal operations in developing countries? Why is it in the purview of the OECD, the Organization for
Economic? Because the OECD it represents the most developed countries in the world. As a matter of fact, it's interesting when we look absolutely off the agenda, but when we look at the movies right now, Oppenheimer is number one, and you know you've got George Marshall involved in that, and George Marshall is the one who was the founder of the OECD. The Marshall Plan is what developed it. The most industrialized nations, and of course it's expanded to a large group, and they can discuss problems that internationally affect those nations, which is like every nation, even those who don't belong, even countries don't belong, have their issues attended to too. So postal systems are critically important, and they work with bribery. They work with transportation issues. The scope is vast. And as a matter of fact, in the United States, which endows OECD the greatest amount, followed by like Japan, we introduce issues too that affect us. Treaty and treasury are big issues for us, and we have a hearing here in the United States of OECD officials. So the postal range affects everybody internationally. So having it within the scope of OECD is not unnatural.
Some of the alumni from the Morella staff we've managed to keep in touch. I managed to keep in touch with from your days among or people that we've dealt with. And a lot of them have been gone on to in postal issues. Is it about working for Connie Morella that sort of weds you to public service and continuing on in working, in being involved in bettering our government?
Well, that's very nice of you to say. That's a high platitude. It's just the people themselves care about getting involved in government because they want to make a difference and show in some way. But I've often looked. We still do a reunion every year, and they are involved with many different aspects of society, and yet they come together. There's a camaraderie, and I think this is what Congress needs to do more of, kind of working together, respecting people. We had a staff that was as diverse as any staff could be. From all over the world, every sect, every race, I mean, you know, and everybody worked together, and because they respected each other, even though they might chuckle at some things or be sorry about some things. And so I guess it's a people thing, and that's what Congress needs to do more of. And when they do, for instance, when they go on trips, boy, this is a great way of bringing them together, different parties together, different people. They learn about each other, and yet they are voting every day and don't even know the other person. So I think it's respecting that makes a difference. Listen, learn, and lead. Those are my three adages.
And I will just say that Congresswoman Morella learned, legislated, and led. And I want to thank you for joining me on the NAPS chat today. Thank you, Connie.
Thank you very much, Bob, and thank you for doing this kind of podcast, which interests people in issues that are so important and in a dynamic and personal way. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you're listening to the podcast. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.